Okay, welcome to the Arizona State Hospital IOC meeting on March 21st, 2024. It is 5:04. And so far I see Melissa, Kay, Chuck, myself, and Janina as present. If there are any other IOC members on currently, can you state that you're on? Okay, we'll see if they catch up. Alice will call. I can text her. She's ill right now, but she will join if we need her. So, okay, let's go ahead and get started. First, welcome. Disclosure of conflict of interest. Does anyone have a conflict of interest? And if so, please state. Okay, hearing none. Did everyone get a chance to review the meeting minutes that were sent out by Larry last month? Okay. Do we have a motion to approve as is, understanding that it's AI generated and there are some errors?
Motion to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So approved. So any update from ADOA other than reminder on the mandatory class training?
That was the only update I had for the committee tonight was the trainings. And Lori brought up a good point a minute ago regarding the browser, the web browser. If you use Google Chrome, you have better success in getting start to finish. So if you need help with that, let me know. Drop me an email. I'll be happy to give you a call back, or you can email the AZ Learning Center directly. That's listed on that email.
I'm still having an issue. Like Tara Morgan, who's supposed to help facilitate my taking of the class, has run into some computer issues. So once hopefully she gets that resolved, I'll be able to take that training.
Yeah, we're going to get you set up.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you, Kate, for that update.
Yeah. For anyone else that hasn't done it, make sure your pop-up blocker is off because it has to open up the training page. And if you get to a point and it seems like it's doing nothing, that's typically what it is.
Yeah.
And that's,
thank you.
That's free. So, okay.
That's the only update I had for the committee. Any questions or concerns, let me know. I'll be happy to help.
Okay. Any updates from any other IOC members that happen to be on? Okay. Hearing none. Let's, our action items. The only action item I could find was that I think Janina or someone mentioned asking if the policies would be loaded up on the site because they're not. And often in other agencies, the generic policies are uploaded.
Thanks. So Lori, members, right now we are not able to post them publicly, but I do have the ability, and I believe Lori, you already have access to it. We are able to essentially create a kind of a generic account where people can log in over the internet and view all of our policies. So in the meantime, I'm happy giving the IOC members access to that account. So you can go into our system and look at our existing policies. I still need to work with DOC or talk to the folks at DOC to figure out exactly how they are putting all of their policies online. We have an internal system at the hospital. Actually, I apologize. It's not an internal system. It's a contracted company that we work with to manage all of our policies, but that does allow us to essentially allow access to that system. So I have zero problem whatsoever giving members of the IOC the access. And Lori, you do have that, correct, as a member of our governing board?
Okay. I do.
So, yeah, we can we can share that. If you want to share that with the IOC members, you're welcome to, and they can get access to it. Otherwise, I can create I can have our team create a secondary login for it as well.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any other admin update, Mike?
Thanks, Lori. So the only update that I have, and I'll let Dr. Flowers jump in if he has anything else, is I would like to introduce Trevor Cook to the Independent Oversight Committee. Trevor is the hospital's new chief quality officer. He's been with us for about 2.5 weeks now at this point. He comes to the hospital with a wealth of experience in behavioral health services in Arizona, including working at Aurora and other facilities. So we're very happy to have him on board. He's already coming into the hospital, asking all of the right questions. And I can tell that Trevor has a vigor behind him to want to make improvements. So I'm very much looking forward to what he recommends we do moving forward, and changes to the quality program at the state hospital to really improve the care being provided to our patients. I think his insight, working very collaboratively with Dr. Flowers and our nursing team, is just going to be, we're going to set a new trend. And that's really my goal for care for our patients. So I'm looking forward to what they all do moving forward in the future.
Oh, good. Thank you. And welcome, Trevor. Do you thank pronounce you. It Cook?
Yes.
Cook? Okay. Okay, thank you.
So, Mike, it would be really helpful to have access to the policies because, you know, when we have the patient visits or, you know, we have discussions with patients and so forth, then we can, I like to go and look at policies, and see what the process in place, and if there's anything that was not followed in a particular case. So
absolutely, Janina. So like Lori can share that user link with the IOC. I will give you a little bit of a warning. Be careful what you ask for, because we have a ton of policies.
Oh, I believe you. I have no doubt, Mike, and I'm not going to look into all of them, because that would be, in an insane
rabbit hole. Yeah.
But you know, I'm just looking mostly for like the medical, procedure, medications, coordination of care, etc. So just those that are pertinent.
Yeah, absolutely. We can get you that access, and you can feel free to jump through that.
Yeah, because like I said, I think that a reset or going back to basics and kind of build from there would be really important. It sounds like you have excellent team members and, having those policies, procedures in place, they act as a safety net, and it will be helpful to, have a successful, I don't know how I should call it, revamping of ASH, or I don't know, something.
Nope, I'm right there with you. There with you.
Okay, so next I'll go on to some of the incident and accident reports, and then we'll go on to patient visits. So I'm going to turn my camera off so you're not looking at my side of my head while I'm looking at my other monitor. So I'm here still. Okay, so the first one, the incident and accidents. Once again, I'll start with the assault perpetrators. And it seems that we have, again, a handful of people that commit or most of the assaults. And on this one, it looks like the top assaulter perpetrator was half on staff and half on patients. And then the next one was about the same. Again, it seems like it's dropped from months ago where the numbers tended to be higher. So that's promising. The first incident and accident report I'll go over was ASH 2024-0439, and it was assault. And it was an assault patient on patient And what was interesting about this was that, you know, the staff was able to redirect and stop the patients from hitting each other, and they were evaluated for abrasions. The treatment team, psychiatrists, psychologists was notified about the incident. Medical provider saw one of the patients, assessed both of them after the incident, and then they transferred one of the patients from one part of the unit to another to separate the patients that seemed to have an issue with each other. So that was good, because I know you guys always don't have the flexibility to do that. You're limited in the number of movements you can do between the units. So that was something I wanted to say was a good outcome following what appeared to be personnel issues between two patients. The next one was ASH 2024-0615. And this one, a patient was in the day room, walked past the registry staff, and that patient was on COS, LOS with another patient in the day room. And one patient unprovoked punched the staff in the face on his jaw. Code Gray was called, and was redirected. Patient went to seclusion. They removed, you know, socks, shoes, other things. They were searched. No contraband was found. They took PRN. Patient verbalized after nursing reviewed it and said, with additional information from the patient, the allegation of staff assaulting the patient, then had them put a DNR of the registry staff involved. So to me, that means there was some evidence that the registry staff may have reacted or assaulted the patient also, or responded. So then it was a do not return for that staff. I think that's what I'm understanding.
So yeah, you're right, Lori. DNR does stand for do not return. And I'm reading the notes on this one right now to figure out exactly what the situation was. I apologize. I'm not familiar with this incident.
Okay. Yeah, because it really didn't say much in the initial description, but in the nursing notes is where that I saw that. Okay, the next one is ASH 2024-0504. And with this one, there were multiple patients that seemed to be agitated a particular morning. And a lot of people were exchanging words and kind of swinging, yelling. The staff was able to redirect the patients so not to antagonize each other. And they separated them. But again, they continued to escalate. At this point, it seems that both parties were spoken to, and the leads advised the nurses of that episode, and the nurses advised the leads to place both parties on ROU. Staff will continue to monitor. So my question there is, they were on the unit when they were escalating. So just saying, keep them on the unit, was that so they could be more closely monitored than if they go to the mall or the cafeteria or anywhere else?
That's accurate, Lori. Yes. And so the ROU status is, it's obviously a temporary precaution for us so that the treatment team can reinvestigate the issue and see if we need to do any changes to medication, to potentially move a patient from one unit to another, and just ensure safety of all parties involved.
Okay. Okay. And other than that, there were just nothing else really stood out. So I know there were two sets of visits this round. Janina and Alice did some. So Janina, do you want to report on your visits, remembering not to mention, you know, the patient's name or anything that would identify, no kind of medical conditions, any of that?
Right.
Thank you.
So what I continue to see is medical care or lack thereof, so, or in follow up. So that is that was pretty much the main theme. You know, it was explained to us that it takes a long time from you know, reporting the you know, issue, the medical issue, to actually having an appointment. You know, so it's a long period of time. And then you know, the coordination of care again is problematic between ASH and the agency or the, you know, facility, I should say. So that is the main issue from the hospital visits.
Janina, can I really quick interject? Just are you speaking specifically to civil or forensic, or I think it's okay to at least say the campus.
Forensic. Yes. And maybe, I don't know, maybe at some point, Mike and Dr. Flowers, if and Dr. Goldstein, if we can, you know, have an offline communication or something to, you know, really look over this this process, because, you know, it's not coherent, it's not streamlined at all, and that can leave the hospital at the liability. I mean, open to liability, and we definitely don't want that. So, you know, so I think, you know, looking at the policies or figuring out the expectation so that the patient knows what to expect when they report a medical condition, and, you know, streamlining the coordination and implementing the treatment plan that was, you know, set up by the outside agencies, you know, how that can be implemented in ASH.
Yeah, Dr. Flowers and I are more than welcome to have that conversation.
Yeah, I would welcome that. And okay, we do our best to coordinate whatever physical health care,
yes,
is required outside. And certainly our primary care medical staff engage with the treatment team on a daily basis.
Right.
But yeah, I'd be glad to have that conversation and whatever we can do to improve things.
Yes. I mean, I'm all about streamlining and, you know, sort of standardizing in a way so that, you know, patients know what to expect, the providers know what to do. And, you know, it's like a uniform process.
And I will let you know, Janina and folks on the committee, that we are, as a state entity, we are limited in kind of the way that we can do this. You know, we have an agreement with ValleyWise, or what used to be MIHS, for, mm-hmm, you know, physical health services that we're not able to provide. But ValleyWise also, if ValleyWise does not have the service that we need, right, then we're limited in our ability to go to an external provider, because by statute, we're not allowed to pay more than the access rate for services. Mm-hmm. And most providers won't accept the access rate. So right, we're trying as hard as we can to find the services that we need for our patients, but we have a statutory, mm-hmm, limitation as far as what we can, mm-hmm, do.
I absolutely understand, and looking at the barriers or limitations is important, because then we know, you know, we know what's going on, and we can put some sort of, like I said, streamlined process in place, you know, so that everybody knows what's going on and is on the same page.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. So any other patient comments or other than kind of more time medical care?
So that was the main thing. And then, you know, again, about rights and, you know, different frustrations with the menus. I wanted to focus on the medical specifically, because that was, you know, the primary issue, and it has to be addressed. Oh, at some point there was somebody proposed to have like a group meeting where we can, where patients can talk to the IOC and express different, you know, I don't want to call them frustrations, but the different ways that you know, the quality of treatment or care or life in ASH can be increased. So that's just something, you know, food for thought, if that will be okay with the leadership.
They do that. So I think it's every quarter, there is a forum. And if you go to the forensic or the civil, they have them on both. And then you'll see maybe 20 patients or 25 patients sit around with their list of what they'd like. So we do participate in those. And the next one, I think I'm out of the country, but it's, I think I took it off my calendar. So that, my bad. I think it's April 4th. Is it 4th, Mike?
I think you're right, Lori. It's that Friday, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And is it forensic campus, right? That time? Or is it civil this time?
Tara, are you on? Is it civil or forensics that's up next? Oh, I think she just lost connection. Okay. I'll follow up. I'm pretty sure that it's forensics, though.
So I think that they were talking about more of a, you know, smaller focus group, if you will. I don't know. I don't know if I should call it a focus group, but, you know, a smaller group versus like a forum. So, you know, if that, you know, just give it some thought, Mike and Lori, and maybe that would be helpful.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I don't want to do anything that could violate like open meeting laws or anything like that. I know you guys can't have a quorum, how that works exactly. But if a few IOC members want to have a meeting with, you know, patients, without anybody from my team or the hospital there, I'm okay. You know, just let me know when and where, and you can have the gym or whatever. And
so again, we can discuss that option, because I don't want to have to create issues or run into, you know, certain violations. So, right. You know, it's just something that was brought up. So,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah. We used to do that pre-COVID a long time ago. Usually it would be two of us, sometimes three, depending on, but we had a bigger IOC committee. And we would go to the civil campus in the conference room, and then people would come in one right after another, and we'd see a bunch of people during our visit. And we've done that in forensic as well. Chuck and I did that in forensic a while ago, but it was it was sequential. It wasn't because, again, we don't know if people want to talk about their concerns in front of others.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we can figure out the logistics, you know, after that, but, you know, I think it might be helpful. So.
Okay. Other than that, okay, that's Kay, you had some concerns?
I do. I have a couple of, I guess, inputs from patients. One of them is actually just concerning the IOC time. At 5 o'clock, a lot of the units are serving dinner. And so some people are either going to have to postpone their dinner till 6:30 until after the meeting. I was wondering if we can push our meeting back to 5:15 so that they get a chance to eat, or is this, is the 5 p.m. just a one time only?
It's a one time only. We're just trying to accommodate. But usually it'll be 6 o'clock.
It'll be six. Okay. And then the second thing is that a couple of patients, or one patient in particular, went to request a hair dryer. In the past, it's been approved, but now with the new, so I have the policy, it's the contraband policy. It says that personal care items containing heating elements are now contraband. And so I don't understand. So like a lot of the females have longer hair and it's freezing on our unit, and like not being able to blow dry our hair is kind of an issue. I was wondering if we can institute a policy or make an exception, like the fingernail clippers, where we get it checked out and checked in from the hygiene room, so that that way, you know, the female patients or whoever needs a blow dryer has access to one.
Kay, this is Mike. So I know that I was not aware of the hair dryers being added to the contraband list. I know we did we did nix like flat irons, because obviously those are very problematic weapon. So I can find out about the hair dryers for you though.
Okay, that's fine. This one is the revised one on 11/23. It's the contraband list, and it says personal care items containing heating elements. And so the peanuts are assuming that that means hair dryers. So you're saying that you're okay with hair dryers, or you need to figure this out?
No, I'm not saying that right now. Let me do some follow-up for you on that one. But I understand where you're going with it.
Yeah, and I mean, if we've used them in the past without issues, like I don't understand why we can't use them with supervision, like the nail clippers or the other things that we've had. You know, we have on unit markers that get used with supervision. So I mean, if we can make that happen, that would ease a lot of patients, because some people, you know, like our unit specifically, Sago, is freezing all the time, and so like to go to bed with your hair soaked and wet is kind of and a real big inconvenience.
So a couple of days ago, Kay, I was actually on the unit because I was made aware of the temperature issue. Has it improved at all in the past 48 hours, or is it still?
It's a little bit better. It's less freezing. I mean, it's still pretty cold, but it's less freezing.
Okay. Thanks, Kay. So for the IOC's information, we found out that we had a bad temperature sensor on that unit that was giving us a false reading. So our computer program thought the unit was operating at a higher temperature than it actually was. I don't know if that sensor's been fixed yet or replaced, but we are working on fixing that unit's issue.
Okay. Well, that's great. But also just going to bed with our hair wet and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Nope. Totally. Thanks, Kay.
Okay.
That's all I have from the patient side.
What was that?
That's all I have from the patient side.
Okay. So we had a couple patient visits also. One was talking about, in general, it was a particular patient, but in general, this has been reiterated before. Sometimes patients are transferred to no fault of their own to a different unit. And it's frustrating for them, because then they have to really start all over with a new team. And this has been reported as problematic in the past, because one team physician would say they're ready for a new level. They're stable in their recovery, everything. And then they go to a new unit, and the PNUM or the team has all new rules, different than the one they just left. So they feel really that it really puts them at a disadvantage, because they feel that if you are doing well in one unit and the hospital needs to move you for their own reasons, that there should be some level of consistency and some level of, like when doctors, you know, check and talk, when one doctor, when they're trading off to another doc, their patient that they still have, they don't say, okay, we're going to start over they may read, one will tell them, here's what I've done, here's what I'm thinking, here's what I've ruled out.
So basically another, coordination of care between the two providers, so that they can, the unit that they transfer to continue the treatment plan, correct?
Correct. And also that there aren't drastic rules between the units, that, you know, it seems, so that was one patient's report. And another, you know, just stark differences in treatment and team approach between units. And another patient reported having to be moved because a whole bunch of new patients were coming in. And then, just out of curiosity, you know, I know that you're set up to receive certain patients in certain units, and when that happens, you may have to bump someone out. So I don't know if you can address kind of what you guys are trying to do to make sure that patients aren't impacted terribly by movements.
Thanks, Lori, members, and I'll let Dr. Flowers also jump in as well. So you are correct in that we have had a fairly rapid influx of forensic admissions so far, and they kind of come in spurts where, you know, we just get notified by the court, we're sending this person to you, they're going to be there on X day. Our primary intake unit on the forensic hospital is the Saguaro unit. That's essentially where people go in for their initial evaluation and assessment, and then depending on the team's analysis or evaluation of the individual, for safety reasons, they may actually stay on the Saguaro unit based on their legal status. So for instance, if they come into us on a restoration of competency or an RTC Rule 11 requirement, or if they are just there under a guilty, except insane 75 day or a GEI 75, they most likely will not leave Saguaro. They'll just be there for a short time, and then they'll get sent out when their time, quote unquote, expires, or the court process re-engages for that individual. For the other or the typical GEI patients, they'll come into Saguaro, they get their evaluation, and then after a set of time, they'll be sent to a different unit based on the way that individual presents and who we think they can safely, you know, interact or integrate with. So the forensic hospital has 143 beds. Right now, I believe the campus's census is 120, 121, and then we have four individuals who are currently en route for admission, which would put us at about 125, 126, a ballpark. But I want to make sure everybody understands that, so say 126 out of 143, that sounds like we have, you know, almost 20 open beds. But 14 of those beds approximately are on the CRU. And I cannot move people to the CRU unless they have the privileges, level 3, level 4, 5, and 6, and the Superior Court has checked off that they're okay to go to the CRU. So realistically, across 6 units, we have like 10 open beds right now. So we're essentially treading close to max capacity on the forensic hospital, and right now we are 100% full on civil. So it is becoming very difficult for us to move folks around to maintain safety, but I do understand and agree 100%, Lori, there needs to be, regardless of that, there needs to be consistency of care and transition from one unit to another. The fact that Saguaro is our intake unit, they're looking at individuals from a different perspective than maybe another unit would, that is gonna have that individual for a long-term time frame to work their program for treatment progression and reintegration. But Dr. Flowers and I have spoken about this in the past week, Lori, when you brought it to my attention, and he and I are in full agreement that we need to do a better job of consistency and that handoff to make sure that there are not these kind of significant ebbs and flows to the patient's progression. So Dr. Flowers, anything that I missed?
No, I think you covered it, and I would second that. I agree there should be as much consistency across treatment teams as possible. That would include everything from medications to behavior plans and other aspects of treatment as it relates to treatment goals. So maybe we need to double our efforts and make sure that all of the treatment teams understand that there should be an organized handoff, clinical handoff from one team to another. But I certainly support the idea that there should be consistencies and not large changes in treatment from one unit to another. I know probably all of us have experienced the frustration of meeting a new doctor and having medications changed and everything else. So I certainly support the idea that there should be as much consistency there as possible.
And when someone moves units, the perspective should not be that treatment restarts. It should be a very fluid, you know, handoff.
Yeah, definitely.
So with all these new patients coming in, forensic GEI or Rule 11 or GEI 75, are they coming in from all parts of the state? Because we've also heard that people feel like Maricopa doesn't get their fair share of ability to go to a hospital instead of going to jail or prison. And I know it has nothing to do with Arnold v. Sarn, because that's not even involved. It's really up to the county prosecutor, right?
That's correct, Lori. So the Rule 11 process, which is, if you're not familiar with that, that's the restoration to competency program. The majority of restoration services in Arizona actually take place in county jails. So the counties have in-house psychiatry in the jails. If anybody specifically, primarily in Pima and Maricopa County, they have more resources. So they're typically able to provide restoration services in the jail systems. Any RTC cases that the hospital gets typically are from the outlying counties where they don't have in-house psychiatry services. So Coconino, Yavapai, they will send us some folks for restoration services. GEI 75 and GEIs, the full GEIs, mm-hmm. It's a mixed bag. I believe about 40-45% of the patients that we get GEI or GEI 75 are from Pima County. And then maybe half of that, and please don't quote me on this, we can always pull the numbers if we need to, are from Maricopa, and then the rest of the outlying counties make up the mix. But the plurality of our forensic patients are out of Pima County.
So could we request, seeing that breakdown over the years from different counties, if we made a formal request?
Are you mainly concerned with the GEI population?
The forensic population, to make sure that people that live in Maricopa aren't given the ability to be treated in a therapeutic hospital rather than jail and prison, that they're not being given that opportunity.
I think Mike is trying to say that we don't, the Ash Hospital doesn't have any jurisdiction. It's up to the prosecutor to decide who comes here.
We know that. I just want to see the numbers.
Yeah, we can definitely, as if the committee makes a motion, you know, we can supply those high level numbers without any kind of patient IDs or identifiers associated with it. I believe that we probably right now have maybe the past 5 years available. Anything prior to 2019 is not in our new system, so we would have to dig that up. But 2019 through potentially like today or last week, we should be able to break it out by county Let you all know kind of the volume that we are seeing.
Yeah, I agree with Laurie because, yes, ideally, psychiatric services should be available in jails and, restoration, etc. However, the reality is different. I totally support that, that motion that Laurie was talking about.
Okay, all in favor for committee members, say aye.
Aye. Okay, so we will run the numbers and we will upload the file to the IOC folder for you, Laurie, to jump into. And I just want to say, Kay, I really appreciate the comment that you just made, and I want to reemphasize that to the committee that this is outside of the hospital's control.
We understand that.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay, the other issue that we had, and I don't hold me on the date, but I'm sure some patients can tell us. So there was a situation, a safety situation on all forensic campuses that lasted 28 hours and basically all phone calls to the outside, accepting phone calls, making phone calls, or unit to unit were suspended due to safety concerns of an incident occurring on the forensic campus. The only calls that were permitted, we were told, was one call for legal. Some patients wanted to call the IOC and it was not permitted. I do understand after discussing this with administration, and since it's an ongoing active investigation, I don't know whether they can say anything, but how could I put this? They had to make sure they controlled communication between units and from outside because they didn't know where the source of the safety incident and violations were occurring. And until they could clear that, everyone was on lockdown. So, I mean, if you want to comment,
I think that was great. Yeah, I think that was great, Laurie. So we do have Janina, this will be one of the things that the team will have access to with that link. We have a very kind of specific protocol that we follow for a forensic lockdown. There's five or six reasons that we are used to justify a lockdown on the forensic hospital. And one of those reasons is a significant safety concern or a contraband concern. So we follow that policy, that protocol. We did not restrict, we allowed patients to still have one phone call per day to their lawyer or their legal consultant, but we did put a restriction on any other phone calls to and from units or to the outside or outside in, simply because of the fact that we did not know exactly what the source was. We wanted to make sure that if a patient could not call the outside and say, stop doing this, they're on to us, anything like that. And Laurie, you're 100% correct. This is still an ongoing investigation that we are working with law enforcement around. So I really can't talk more than just that. But I do apologize to everybody who was involved but people who were kind of caught up as we were moving forward with that process.
So some people that weren't responsible were impacted, the same with the people that were responsible.
Correct.
And until they could decipher who was who. The only question is they wanted to make sure in the future that they could call the IOC because we definitely are not the source of what was going on.
Yeah. And I think that's a great point. I will bring that back to our policy team to see if we can make a footnote to change that to allow the individuals to call the IOC during those situations. Fortunately, these situations are few and far in between. Hopefully this is not a situation that we run up to anytime soon again.
Okay. Chuck, you have your hand raised for a while. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Mike, I just wanted to clarify something you said earlier, which is that the civil side is 100% occupied. And I just wanted to make sure that I believe you have 117 beds on the civil side. All of those beds are occupied, is that correct?
So, Dr. Goldstein, fantastic question. You are correct. We have 117 beds on the civil campus. One of those beds, though, Dr. Goldstein, is a medical observation bed that we do not admit patients to. It would be one bed if we had a current patient who had a significant medical issue that we needed to isolate and put them under observation, we would put them in. So from a psychiatric perspective, we have 116 beds that we can admit patients to, one bed that's kind of hanging out there for medical observation. But yes, so 116 of 116 beds are currently occupied. I apologize, that's incorrect. Dr. Flowers, we did a discharge today, correct?
We had a discharge yesterday.
Okay, we had a discharge yesterday and we are already identifying the person who's going to come in and take that bed. So I apologize, we are at 99.5% occupancy with that free bed about to be occupied again.
There has been some question in the past from various people about some of those beds, perhaps even up to 15 or 20 of the beds being occupied by people that might be housed in other places because they're not restorable at all. There's no chance that the services of ASH are going to make them better. Is that still a realistic view?
I don't know the exact number, Dr. Goldstein, members, but I think, you know, my staff and I are never going to give up trying to help somebody, but there are individuals that I think Dr. Flowers could speak to who are no longer, so their behavioral patterns are no longer symptomatic of a psychiatric ailment. They're more neurocognitive or neurodevelopmental, where the individual needs, you know, all techs, they need a skilled nursing facility, levels of care that the state hospital is not able to provide and not really licensed or certified to provide. But there is no other option right now for these individuals in the state. So Arizona does not have a state-run nursing home. If we did, that would be the area that they would most likely be most applicable to be admitted to or transferred to, but that's not an option. So, you know, we're working with Access, we're working with the health plans to try to make sure these individuals get the level of care that they need, but there's really no other safe place to put them at this point. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Dr. Flowers, I don't know if I would go as high as 20, but there's definitely a few on civil that I think could be put into a different kind of level of care, like a SNF or something like that. That would free up those beds.
Like a memory care or something like that.
Right.
Michael, to your point here that there's no state-run facility, that does not abrogate the ability of the state to contract with a private facility for these individuals. I don't see why that can't be an option.
No, it absolutely is, Dr. Goldstein, but it's not. And by no means am I trying to pass the buck, and that's not the state hospital's obligation. So the state hospital, we're just one building. We are one building in a multi-billion-dollar care continuum. But if the health plans don't have the available network to put those individuals in, then our hands are kind of tied. So that's kind of where we're running up against rock and a hard place situation here.
Even with the patients that have Altex.
Fantastic question, Janina. Yes, having all techs does not guarantee that there is an available bed for that individual to go to. We also have, we're working closely with our colleagues at Access because we do have concerns about the all techs process, specifically mm-hmm. with the evaluation process for all techs and all techs requiring a neurologist to diagnose dementia.
Right.
Any physician can diagnose dementia. So as long as they're certified and you know, credentialed to do so. I think the Altec's requirement for a neurologist to sign off that the person meets Altec's certification or Altec's eligibility is a hindrance to helping some of our folks get into the right location.
Yes, I agree with you 100% because, you know, I run into this issue with my own patients that, you know, need Altec's. So maybe, you know, having a closer contact with a ValueWise neurology, you know, to have that sign off to place them in an appropriate facility, because realistically, you know, you're not a memory. You guys don't have a memory care.
Correct. Dr. Flowers, could you jump in real quick? You mentioned, and I really appreciate that, Janina. So we had this conversation probably in the past 48 hours, Dr. Flowers and I did. So obviously we have a contract with ValueWise to do neurology assessments. Is that correct, Dr. Flowers? But we still have difficulty getting the appointments.
Right. And the challenge, I think, is that oftentimes we'll have patients go to see the neurologist and their first impression of the patient is that this is a psychiatric patient with a behavioral problem, and that's the primary issue, and less so the memory issue or the dementia. Mm-hmm. And I think the important thing to keep in mind here is the comorbid nature of these illnesses.
Correct.
And if people have bipolar disorder or schizophrenia, that does not exclude them from future development of a dementing illness.
Right.
And unfortunately, the way our healthcare system is designed, if you go to a neurologist and the most prominent thing they see is somebody who's paranoid or hallucinating or having a mood disorder, they look at that and say, well, it's a psychiatric patient and it's less likely that they focus on the dementia. And so that's a big challenge. And I think Mike makes an excellent point there, is that dementia is a diagnosis that can be made by a primary care provider, by a psychiatrist, by a neurologist, by a nurse practitioner, by many different providers. Right. And the notion that it can only be done by a neurologist, in my mind, is more of just a hurdle than...
Yes, it is. And I absolutely hear what you're saying, Dr. Flowers, you know, because whenever I send my patients, for example, to emergency room and so forth, they get discharged, you know, with the diagnosis of schizophrenia or whatever. So, and I send them there for medical reasons. So, you know, I think maybe doing doctor docs with a neurologist and ask specifics, you know, like imaging, because... that is part of the, diagnostic criteria.
I agree. But what I think I would like to push for is in that percentage of individuals, I think our primary care team, in collaboration with our psychiatry staff, certainly can order the neuroimaging, do the workup, and make a definitive diagnosis of dementia without having a neurologist involved.
Right. And because that's the imaging part is, you know, what the neurologist is supposed to be doing. So hopefully that will be accepted by Altec's.
Yep. Well, another thing I was going to tell you guys, at the Banner Alzheimer and Dementia Center, I was there on another thing I'm involved with, and I'm going to mess this up, but Dr. Gopal Krishna is they have both neurologists and psychiatrists there, and we were talking writ large in dementia and Alzheimer's, and you know, a lot of what we know, what they know, there are certain genes, but there are also certain environmental, there are certain diseases. And what was interesting, as we were talking, he said people, one of the risk factors is having schizophrenia is a higher association for developing dementia. and Alzheimer's. And my question to him was, is it because of untreated? Is it because of the social aspect? Is it because of the medications? So I have him doing a webinar for me on July 2nd. I'll send you guys links to it because I said, I'm interested in, yes, it is, but which part of that is causing the higher risk? So we'll see what he comes up with.
Lori, would you be willing to also share with us that link? I would love to have some of my providers jump in on that as well.
Sure.
Okay.
It probably won't come out till June because I usually don't send them out too long because people forget. But right. As soon as I do, I'll put a note to send it to you. But I think it'll be interesting to understand.
Thank you very much.
No, that would be excellent, actually.
Dr. Goldstein, did I answer your question?
Okay. Missing in action. We'll see. The next thing I was going to go to was reading decision letters. There were a bunch of decision letters. 7 had unsubstantiated grievances or complaints that were investigated. 12 patients changed their minds on pursuing a grievance or complaint when the investigator interviewed them and they withdrew the complaint. And I didn't see any that were substantiated. So that was just something else that was in our shared drive. And with that, I think we've done patient visits. The other thing I was going to mention, we do have a person who is interested in joining the IOC, Jane Jepson, and she's very excited, but she ended up having a conflict and couldn't join tonight. So we will not be having an executive session. Other than that, anything else from the team members before we go ahead and go to public comment?
I just wanted to confirm the time for April 4th. All right, I had in my notes that was actually the civil forum. I know, Mike, I think you said forensic, but just want to know the time.
Tara, are you back on?
We can follow up later.
We'll get you guys exactly what it is. You may be, I'm fairly certain you're probably right, Melissa, that it is a civil forum this time.
Okay. And the other thing I want to mention, thanks to Melissa's help, she was able to help get a beanbag chair that's passes the cleanliness test and germ-free test over to the hospital for evaluation. So that was nice.
I didn't follow up with that. Melissa, did that get delivered?
It did. I delivered it yesterday morning.
Excellent. I'm going to head over to the warehouse and check it out tomorrow. Fantastic. Great. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, sure.
Excuse me. Sorry, guys. My thing was going in and out. But yes, the civil patient form will be on Thursday. It's going to be on the 4th. And it'll be early in the morning at 9 a.m. So if anyone needs a link to come in or want to come in to the and haven't been invited, just send it through Lori and Lori will give it to me and then I'll meet you in the civil lobby. But I'm sorry about I'm having technical difficulties tonight. Sorry.
Can that be joined via Zoom or no?
No, we normally do civil and forensic. We let everyone come in so they can see the patients and see the facility and hear the conversation.
Okay.
And then we also allow for the IOC to make at a separate date, they can come in and visit the patients via telephonic, or can come actually on the campus and meet with the patients. And they arrange that through my office.
Now, I know, Tara, previously it was limited during the week. And I know some of our committee members, lots of them work full-time jobs, but we couldn't do weekends. Is that still the case?
I normally don't work on weekends. I don't work weekends, to be honest. I don't do Saturday and Sunday, but I'll speak to my manager, then he'll speak to Mike, you know, about that. But I don't do so. It's always Monday through Thursday or Monday through Friday. And I try to work with you guys' schedule because I understand you you're professionals, you have your own lives and your own jobs, but I always try to facilitate them. And especially there was a comment that Kay made that was so true, when I have to do it around what patients are doing, because as you know, this is a therapeutic hospital and we're trying to get them therapy, and then they have meal time, then they have recreational time. So I try to work that and coincide with you guys' schedule. But as for the weekend, that is something I need to speak with my manager, TC, and then speak with Mike Shelton about. I can't
yes,
just
please, come please on. Do.
I'll and you just so everybody knows, I'll approve it. So if okay, we need excellent. To system on a Saturday or a Sunday, and Tara, you need to flex some time. Just figure out the schedule and the logistics and let me know, and I'll sign off on it. There's no worries there.
Excellent. Thank you. That opens more days for me okay. than to visit.
Thanks. And I think too, it would be a win-win because then we're not interfering with their treatment.
That's good.
Usually less on the weekend.
That's good. Just last two things because I have to get off.
Okay.
To the lady, I don't want to mispronounce your name. Is it Jana or Janina?
Janina.
Janina. Okay. Nice to meet you. And last but not least, Lawrence, I'm going to get with you because we're nearing the finish line to getting Kay the testing, but we're not there yet. Okay. I need to speak to my manager, TC, and then he needs to speak to Mike about something. And then I'll get back with you probably before the close of business on Monday. If that's okay.
Thank you.
No thanks. Problem. And you guys all have a nice week, but I have to get off.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you, Tara. Okay, anything else before we go to public comment? I do know that we have one request for a telephonic visit, and we will do that. I don't know if there's any other carryover, Janina, if any of the patients that were on the list.
Yes, actually, there are some carryovers, and I can let you know. Once the weekends open up, that would, increase the the chance for me to go on site, of course, with somebody else.
Okay. Well, with that, can we go to public comment now?
This is John Wallace on Sycamore. I'll be brief.
Hi, John.
Hi. Hey, I missed you guys Monday. And the other attempt to do a visit, your car broke down. I know you guys are busy. And I want to take the moment to thank all of you for your efforts on behalf of the people at the Arizona State Hospital. This is a real can of worms here. I hear you talking about consistency and I'm afraid there's some bad eggs, patients and staff, that are making this very difficult. There is a culture here that is passed on from older staff to newer staff, and we need to address that as a community. The only way I think the recovery model can be made more effective is that rather than consistency, that has allowed the concept of the cluster of care, which is a very efficient way to do some things, but it is perverted into a means of deprivation and retaliation against people that need more things than others. I've been accused, staff have complained that they have to do more for me than for anybody else. And the only thing is that I'm an active person. My sleep is disrupted by pain. So anyway, besides my personal issues, I would like to suggest that we look at actually treating everyone as an individual whenever it's possible. The laws and statutes require my living space to be as normal as possible. And frankly, the staff do not allow us to have anything normal here. The Sycamore unit is depriving everyone of access to computers and video games because they don't want to do anything at night. Now, there was a time not long ago when the pain would drive me from my bed and I'd be allowed to take a shower at 2 in the morning and play the video games until I could get the meds again. And then I'd work on the computer if no one else was using it, if I wasn't disturbing anybody. But when the pain began to get worse and I couldn't interact with people anymore, instead of telling me, hey, John, how can we help? What can we do? The retaliations became very, you know, real, and hostility is a factor in every day of my life. I am constantly insulted, treated like a dysfunctional child, and I'm not the only one that suffers this kind of abuse. I'm begging you all to let me help. I don't want to sue anybody or get anybody in trouble. The staff need more training, more education. We need to be treated as grown-ups, mostly. The Sycamore unit sign-out sheet that we use to manage our resources has hours and hours that are left blank because no one's allowed to use them. I've been harping on this, and I'm hoping you all can come to terms that not everybody working here is fit to work here. Furthermore, I suggest audio recordings to go with the video. Now, I've been keeping track of incidents that you can see the misconduct on the video. The night before last, I blacked out just as they started giving out meds and snacks. I came to, and I was the last person to get my snack. My meds I get much later than everybody else. Anyway, the tech told me that he'd given out my snack, that I didn't have a snack. And what was my snack? I didn't know. And was making fun of me, you know, insulting my intelligence. I became so angry that I just walked away from the man. And you can see that on the video, day before yesterday. That was the 22nd. Anyway, or the 18th. Later that night, I went to the tech board, and he told me my snack had been thrown out. So I never got any food with my meds. The next morning, because all my meds are supposed to be taken with food, I was passing blood in my urine. That's been going on for a couple months. I don't feel good. My health and safety is in danger. I keep blacking out. I don't know I'm unconscious until I wake up. So I'll have to give up my career as a race car driver. I think audio recordings and perhaps a designated advocate stationed on each unit at all times, day and night, might be an answer to protect staff and patients. An unbiased witness, let's say, to help protect people from each other. Just, I don't know how we could do that, because one person can't be everywhere at once, except we do have the video cameras. Installing audio would work. I think I'm close to my time limit. Thank you, everyone, for your time and your effort. Please, maybe we could set up a Skype, a video visit, and let me fax you some of the things I have. I've put together a presentation so you all can understand what my case illuminates here. This hospital isn't treating people the way we're supposed to be treated. The courts didn't obey the law in my case, and I'm not sure what to do about it. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a doctor. I do know that I have never been mentally ill, that psychiatrists lied to the court when they told the court.
So, John, can I wrap that up now, and we will have someone come visit or do a video call? But yeah, again, we can't treat individual cases.
Well, the thing is, my case illustrates a lot of what's wrong here. Anyway, I need to get you some documents, but they're too valuable to send through the mail. I'm not paranoid. I wouldn't, if you pick them up, I'll let you have even the originals if you need them. Okay. Good night.
Well, first of all,
thank you. Wait. Wait, we can't really interact. We can, okay. Or answer. We can. Yeah, okay.
Good night, everyone, and thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else that would like to chat? Anyone else from the public that would like to make a public comment about general conditions, not their personal treatment?
Me again, John Wallace. The temperatures on the units do vary quite a bit. Sometimes it's cold, sometimes it's hot. And I don't understand that. Knowing something about climate control, this place that's equipped with state-of-the-art equipment, the temperature shouldn't vary much at all. Perhaps there's a loose nut on the controls. Anyway, thank you for the beanbag thing. I know a lot of my peers are looking forward to maybe getting those. I'm done.
Okay, do we have anyone else from public that would like to make a comment? Okay, hearing nothing or no one else that wants to speak, do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Do I have a second?
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Thanks for your flexibility. And we will see you next month at 6 p.m. And remember, in the meantime, if you want to visit, ask Tara, ask Kay to call and let us know, and we'll try to get that set up. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye. Thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye.